Hi, everyone. I'm Jennifer Vine, President and CEO of the Education Foundation of Sarasota County and your host for Education Conversations, where we share ideas on education today and ways to help prepare students to thrive. I want to welcome everyone to the continuation of this mini-series on education and the economy, and on this episode of Education Conversations that we are calling New College Today. So today I'm joined by New College of Florida's President Richard Corcoran, and he certainly has an illustrious and very accomplished career. And I'm excited to talk with you, Richard. I really am. But for the listeners, for you all, just to know that his background includes not only, and maybe he can share some more, but I know he certainly was an attorney, a consultant. He served in the as a Speaker of the House for two legislative sessions. And then in 2018, he was appointed by Governor Ron DeSantis to serve as Florida's Commissioner of Education, and that was probably where I started to really pay attention to him even more closely. And then in 2023, fast forward, he was appointed, after serving 7 months as the interim president, he was appointed by the New College Board of Trustees to actually be their permanent president. And a lot has happened in that period of time, and we certainly want to hear from him. So Richard Corcoran, President Corcoran, thank you so much for being on Education Conversations.
Oh, it's a real pleasure. Thank you, Jennifer.
Yeah, it's great. Well, there's so much I want to talk to you about. There's so much I want to learn. You are certainly a leader that is focused on a lot of this work that is really in the age of disruption. So part of what we want to figure out is understanding more about the intersection of why a liberal arts education really is important and valuable, especially in today's changing world. Why is it so relevant to today's economy?
I always say at interviews or previews with students and parents, if you were to take any, for the most part, significant act of history, whether it's economic or non-economic, people who have impacted society, whether it's a great scientist like Einstein or it's a civil rights leader like Martin Luther King, they all are founding fathers. The philosophers are founding fathers, read and built the Constitution off. All of those people have liberal arts degrees. It really is the way, if you want to create great citizens, great people. Cicero, the ancient Roman philosopher, politician, we quote him a lot, but he would say that education is an end unto itself, and it's what makes us distinctly human. Frederick Douglass, who escaped slavery, would say that education is freedom. It's the uplifting of the human soul to the glorious light of truth, and to deny anybody that kind of a world-class education is a crime against humanity. And if you give somebody that education, which we can talk about, mm-hmm. but if you give somebody that education, I always say one of the great failings, obviously I'm a conservative, I was a Republican, it's well known, mm-hmm. but people in my own party would say, what's the philosophy of education? What's the purpose of an mm-hmm. education? If you go to a forum, you probably do it all the time, and ask a parent, ask anybody, they'll say it's to get a good job. Mm-hmm. And that is just an absolute morally bankrupt, non-economic good way of thinking.
A short-sighted way.
Very short-sighted. Mm-hmm. And it will not equal as great economic output as if you educate somebody as an end unto itself that makes us distinctly human. All those great things that we talk about. And if you do that, that individual, in that education that they're given, they will always be employed. They will always have a great career, no matter how changing the environment is. And right now we're in an amazingly changing environment, which makes it even more important to have that great liberal arts basis as an education. But that's what we do here. But if you get that great liberal education, you think outside the box, you synthesize large volumes of information, you become a great decision maker, a critical thinker, you've wrestled with all the great questions of life, and it allows you to think in broader and more expansive terms than just a linear education that might equal to a job. So we say, not only will we train you up to get the great first job out of New College, we're going to train you up for your last job. Because who knows what AI does to the marketplace? Our point is it won't matter. You'll be employable for your last job as employable as you are for your first job.
That's so interesting you say that, because it really, what you're kind of speaking to is a lot of our behaviors and habits and traditions of learning, we need to unlearn, and we need to relearn and learn different things and learn how to be a continual learner. So you brought up the question about AI, so I'm actually kind of curious to know more about that, because one might argue that with the exponential kind of explosion of AI, that actually would mitigate the need to have critical thinking and all of those liberal art tenets, if you will, because it's becoming more automated. So speak to that and share kind of that reason why that may not hold water.
people are like, well, you know, there's this war between technology or STEM and the liberal arts or the humanities. And the reality is that the great tech minds of all time, Steve Jobs, went to Reed College. He was a huge liberal arts guy. And when he was asked, why are you the first $1 trillion market cap company in the history of the world and not Microsoft or not Oracle or all these other different companies at the time in the internet revolution, he said, because we live at that intersection of technology or STEM and the liberal arts or the humanities. And that intersection is what makes your heart sing. And he said, you can't teach liberal arts. Either they've been trained up to understand the liberal arts over years and they get it and they have that mind and they have that way of thinking and analyzing and communicating. That you can't replace. Technology, he would even joke and say, I might rather you didn't have a technology degree because we're going to teach you the Apple way in 16 months or 18 months. And I don't have to detox you from what you may have learned from some professor who's been out of the workforce for 10 years. And so he really said the emphasis at Apple was on that liberal arts, but that intersection is what makes your heart sing. And I don't care if you look at NVIDIA with Jensen Huang, you look at Elon Musk, you look at all the great minds of today in the technology revolution talking about AI. And what they're saying is it's actually the opposite. We must go back and insist we're educating in a liberal arts fashion because we need people to think outside the box and wrestle with the big picture. The most easily replaceable jobs, they always say dirty jobs, dangerous jobs, and dull jobs. Those are the automatics. But then the next one are the ones that are easily linear and replaceable. So what's linear and replaceable? Architecture, engineering, those types of jobs can be done as well or better than AI. Even as a lawyer, I could tell you that probably AI as a whole will write a better brief, research case law better. All of those things, they're very linear. And what's not linear, and I always use it for anyone who watches sports, you can watch football and it'll be like fourth and two to go in a football game. And AI will come on the screen and say they have a 32% chance and AI says, go for it.
Right.
You know, in golf, they'll have Tiger Woods is about to have a 48-foot putt. And on the screen, it'll do a quick measurement and say he has a 6% chance of making this putt. All of that's true. What you can't replace, though, is the head coach when it says go for it on fourth and two. The head coach on the sideline with that outside-the-box thinking, he knows that his guard is absolutely intimidated by the nose tackle and cannot block him. He knows his kicker is stressed out because he might have tweaked his hamstring. All these different variables that go into that AI can't replace in that moment, that critical thinking, that decision-making is not replaceable. And that is why you're hearing all of those great tech guys today talk about returning to having this critical thinking education, this communication skills education, this outside the box education of and the way of thinking that you're not necessarily going to get straight from a STEM degree.
So interesting that you describe liberal arts education as out of the box. So it's kind of non-traditional. It's something that's not maybe not in the mainstream, although we have some examples of that in higher ed. Touch a little bit about your time when you were the commissioner in education for Florida. Because that covered from early education all the way to adult learning. What were some of the successes that you saw that Florida was leading in? And where are some places where you think there's still opportunity that we can strengthen?
Education is a plethora of topics and needs and everything under the sun. And if we get it right, we hold our constitutional republic for another 250 years. If we don't, you know, always people say to me, what's the greatest threat? You read in debates, you watch the presidential debates. Oh, it's, you know, Putin's Russia. It's, you know, radical jihadism. It's China. And the absolute greatest threat to our country, and we're witnessing it, is we are, as the richest country in the history of mankind, spending tens of $20,000 and $50,000 a year in many jurisdictions for students per year. And we have some of the worst scores on the international PISA exam. You know, we're not even in the top 20 in math or science or English. And some were not even in the top 30. That's just an embarrassment. And that's what's eating us away. You can't, you know, when Edison was asked, when he came out of the Constitutional Convention and they were saying, what kind of republic did you give us? And he said, It's not Edison. I'm drawing a blank.
Jefferson?
No, non-president.
Let's go down the list here. Who are the other ones? All right, folks. The founding fathers, the writers of the Federalist Papers. Which ones? Where are we going to grab?
We got an F here on this podcast on our history. But anyway, he said, we gave you a republic if you can keep it. The point was you can't have a constitutional republic. You can't have something as beautiful as what we have unless you have an educated electorate. If the electorate doesn't understand what it means to live and be a person in a self-governing society, it'll cease to exist. And all, even the Washingtons, the Jeffersons, they all said some variation of the same thing. And so you have to have that education. And that's the greatest threat to our society. We are failing to do that. Even in Florida, where we're ranked number one in education, give or take, depending if you take the NAEP exam or you take our FSA, somewhere in the ballpark of 60 to 40% of our students are partially or semi-partially or fully illiterate. Yeah. I mean, we just promote them. It's a crime against humanity, to quote Frederick Douglass. And so I would tell you, you know, what does Florida do better? And that's why we are ranked number one, is one, we are putting a tremendous emphasis year over year on early education. You have to grab people from birth. You know, the deficit that happens between birth and 5 years old is enormous. And we gotta eliminate that deficit. Choice, giving parents real power over the destiny of their children and the education of their children, and letting them make decisions. Do I want a small school with a small student faculty ratio? Do I want to go have them go to a big school? Or do I want it to be a parochial based or not? All of those choices should be in the hands of the parents, and the government should allow those choices. And wherever you have that competition, it raises all of the ships. All of the schools get better in those jurisdictions. And we've seen that in Florida as it leads the nation. So we've done great with that. On higher education, you know, the governor's just put a tremendous focus on making sure there's balance. You know, if you have a school that's everybody hard right, that's a terrible education. If you have a school that everyone is hard left, that's a terrible education. You want to strike that balance, and you want to teach kids how to think and not what to think. Let them figure it out for themselves, and put before them all the great arguments, all the great issues of time. And when you do that, you end up with good results. That's why our education system is constantly, plus the cost, keeping the cost down. Number one, 8 years in a row for higher education. But I think Florida does it really, really well. But I would say even Florida, and having been there and seen the results that have come over the last decade, were somewhat of a mouse on a treadmill, because we have got to move faster and quicker. I remember I did a study and said, okay, if you did not have a good grade on your FSA exam in the third grade, and then we measured you later at 10th grade and said, you know, where were you? Even in Florida, 85% of the kids, whatever their grade was, stayed at 10th grade in that massive span of having them and growing them. In addition to that, I said, okay, let's say we're at 50, 58, depending on what exam, whether it's the NAEP or the FSA, we're at 58%. What would it take to get us to 100% literacy? So everybody's on grade level. There's nobody that has any deficit. And it's like 230 years. We don't have 230 years.
I support you on that.
Yeah. So we've got to move faster. Even all those are the things that we do well, but we have got to move exponentially faster. I've said numerous times, last thing is, you know, I think the time has come where, you know, it's a terrible analogy for an education show, but, you know, if you're, and I'm not a gambler, but if you're in Vegas, it's time to take all our chips, all of our money, and put it all in on education from pre-K all the way to, and get it right. And if we get to those numbers of 95-100% literacy, it's a game changer for the country.
Well, I can hear your passion for sure. He's getting fired up in here, listeners. I mean, because it's really, it's an important topic, and it's one that I share that passion. And at the Education Foundation, we certainly see that. And what you're also speaking of is that intersection of the art and science of education. And I support your tenets of when you speak about, you know, NAEP or OECD and where we rank as a country. If we were put on the Olympic stage, we would certainly be an embarrassing, you know, group, because we would see that we're not even in that top 10. We're, you know, we are mid-rank to low rank on many of those tangible factors. But bring me back now to where New College of Florida is now addressing this. What are the things you're doing to make sure that the students who come here are going to get that lifelong education that's going to help foster their intellectual curiosity, their ability to think critically? Give me some specific examples that our listeners can better understand of the great things that are happening at New College.
Well, the big things that happened, I think, initially were, I've written a whole book on on it called Storming the Ivory Tower about what we did at New College. And the reason I wrote it, because there's so much of the publicity was not wrong. It was, I mean, I hate to say it because it's a strong word, but it was a lie. And so what I wanted people to see was the upheaval that happened wasn't a result of Governor DeSantis or the legislature or these new board of trustees. The upheaval was after decades of the current president and the president before the current president and the faculty before the current faculty and the students. And the students, all of them said, this is an absolute school circling the drain of failure and it's toxic and we need to fix it. And so I think the first thing that happened was just getting rid of any kind of indoctrination. You can't have a great education if you're only teaching one side again. So I think that was like, you know, okay, first of all, we're gonna have balance, real balance. I always say as somebody, and I'm dating myself, but what you want in before students is you want to have somebody like a William F. Buckley debating someone like a Gore Vidal. And let the students figure it out. But you're gonna expose them to the great thoughts and minds of all sides.
So give me an example of a course at New College that is doing just that, because I think that's a great opportunity to say we're opening up all viewpoints so people can really understand and make their own intellectual choice. So give me an
example. We do it in every, I could name all our courses.
Okay.
And I'll get, because what we did, to your point, is then the second thing is we changed the curriculum. And we said, you know, if you want to have an innovative, great curriculum for today, AI is up before us, you have to strike that balance between the humanities and STEM, between the liberal arts and between technology. And so we redid our core curriculum, and it's Techne and Logos, or liberal arts and technology, or STEM and humanities, however you want to say it. Now we have that. And so every student that comes here is exposed to both. You could be a literature major, but you're also going to understand basic technology and what it's doing in the world today, whether it's AI, whether it's statistics or whatever, data science. Every student's going to be exposed to both. So they graduate and they're super well-rounded, not only in the technology sphere, but also in the liberal arts. And same thing, if you're a computer science major, you're going to understand the liberal arts. You know, the great questions of time will be wrestled with in every class. So what is a just society? What does it mean to live a good life? What is the nature of man? All of these things that have been, you know, blowing through the minds of everyone for centuries and are timeless need to be thought of and debated. And that's what allows you to have that broader spectrum, the more critical thinking. They do studies on who, you know, once a kid graduates from undergraduate and they want to go become a doctor and they take the MCAT, they want to be a lawyer, they take the LSAT, they want to go to grad school, they take the GMAT. And so they look over the decades and they say, okay, who's scoring really, really high on these exams? And consistently, one of the top scorers on those exams over the last 10, 20, 30 years is a philosophy major. Mm-hmm. And the reason that's enlightening is because it just shows that point that a philosophy person, when you say thinks outside the box, they just wrestle and they see and hear and know things that somebody with a more technical degree might not have. The people here, we all might say, okay, what is a just society? That's a broad statement. Yeah. It's been wrestled with from Aristotle to Socrates to George Washington to Jefferson. It's a fascinating, but people ought to be wrestling with those great questions. And that's what really opens the mind and helps you become a lifelong learner.
Right.
And understand that more things than you think are tied together.
That's important to reflect on. And certainly we always want that inquiry process to happen.
Yes.
So it's great to hear that you're really embedding that, integrating it in all the courses that you have here on New College. You have a new master's program too, just speaking a little bit selfishly about the world of education. What are you doing with that particular course and who are you attracting to enroll in that course?
So we had one master's program, data science, and, mm-hmm. and we've bought in more. Just today, I just got out of an interview with another computer science fantastic professor who's going to join our ranks, hopefully. Then we added marine mammal. And so it was an extension of our marine biology program. We have one of the great faculty members in the country, in the world, Dr. Heidi Harley, and she specializes in communication and dolphins. We've brought in some additional folks who've worked with elderly people with Alzheimer's, people with PTSD in the mind and how that works. And then tying that into marine mammals. Mm-hmm. And so we have that great program and it's in its first year and is already just going gangbusters. And now we're going to add, which is really to your show, a master's in educational leadership. And the goal is, when I talk to your superintendent or other superintendents, or you look at the data, the number one criterion, and I'm not talking about the students, I'm talking about the delivery of the product. Mm-hmm. Because obviously, if a student presents with two parents, it's always a different level of skill and knowledge than somebody without two parents. It doesn't mean you can't get a great student with a single parent, but it's harder work. And so taking those things out, you know, somebody obviously, you know, that is upper income versus someone who's lower income has been exposed to more words. These are all the studies that have come out. Right, more words, right. More books, everything. I mean, 62% of low-income people don't even have a book in their house. It's just tragic. Mm-hmm. So taking that aside, the delivery is, who is the principal of the school? If there is a great principal, they hire great teachers. If there's great teachers, they deliver great products to the students. And you see those schools basically just, you could take a great principal and put them in an F school, and you could take a principal from an F school and switch them. You could put the F principal into the A school and the A school principal into the F school. And I will tell you, within 1 year, the F school will be a B or an A, and right. You know, give or take, and the A school will drop to a B or a C or a D. It's just that much. And so but there's a dearth of that great leadership being taught, and it needs to be leadership from, you know, we're right near MacDill Air Force Base. We should have generals that are saying, here's basic leadership skills. You need to understand the pedagogy. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of teachers graduate and they think, I know this subject matter better than anyone, so I'm just going to pontificate and the kids are going to get a great education. No, it's two things. You espousing that great education, and then you understanding and knowing that they learned it. Every single 20 kids in that class learned it that specific day. And when you do that day after day after day, you end up with an amazing result. So you have to have the pedagogy. You have to have the understanding of the metrics. Mm-hmm. You know, how are you scored, and where should your focus be? Those are huge things. We have that in higher education. But if you do that and you produce these great principals, what we want to do is say, hire someone out of our master's program, put them in any school, anywhere in the state, at any, you know, full choice. Right, I don't care if it's charter, traditional, it doesn't matter. They're going to produce, you know, an excellent A school. And we need just a ton of them. And I don't care what superintendents I talk to, anybody, we need great principals.
We sure do. And when will that program start?
We're hoping to start this fall. We're about to announce the dean for it, and then hire the faculty and recruit the students.
That's super. Okay.
And we're hoping to get pretty quickly to a capacity of 50 to 100. We're a little bit worried we might have more than that because of the need. I think we can immediately launch and grow, but you got to go out and recruit the faculty. You got to make sure that everyone's on the same page, mission aligned, and understand what it does take to make that great principal.
And so if people want to find out more information about that, they can look on the New College website, ncf.edu.
Yeah.
I think that's a terrific program that's going to be coming down the pike, along with some other ones. So our time is starting to come to an end. So I have so many more questions to ask. We'll have to do another one later. But when you think about your own legacy, how would you describe what you want your legacy to be known for?
I have an amazing wife, and we have 6 kids. So, I mean, the short, easiest answer is, you know, I'd like to be known as a great husband, because she's a phenomenal wife in all levels. In fact, I talk about my children and my wife and my dedication in the book, but they're just phenomenal. You know, if right now someone could say you could do anything with an hour, it would be hang with my wife or hang with my kids. You know, when I think about, I got to get off work and I have a dinner, you know, you have to do so much fundraising and stuff. But, you know, what I think about is, okay, when that ends at 9 o'clock, do I have time to hang out with the kids or do something with my wife? You know, and I would like that to be known. The jury's still out. I got, you know, 6 kids, so a lot are still, they're at college all the way down to middle school. So that jury's out, but I hope it goes well. And my parents were both older. Dad was born in 1919. My mom was born in 1925. My mom was British. They lived through the Great Depression, and they had no family. They had really no upbringing. My dad's dad died when he was 2. He was put in an orphanage and raised basically in Catholic orphanages his whole life. My mom, her parents during the Great Depression in England, it was so dire that he left England and went to India, which was a colony at the time, and managed a tea plant, like just basically worked on a tea plantation. So she was raised there till she was like 5, and then sent back to England and was raised in boarding houses, adoptive parents in boarding school. And so they really didn't have family. So they always emphasized family, but they also emphasized that family is the most important thing, and to fight for your family and be together. But they also emphasize that your philosophy matters. You should know your philosophy in work, your philosophy in parenting, your philosophy in education, whatever it might be, because their whole lives were affected by people with philosophies that they didn't agree with or espouse, but because they existed, it changed the whole world, whether it was the greatest economic calamity or World War II. And so I think what I would like to do is, like what I think my parents did, is just have a profound impact on society. And I think the most profound impact you can have on society is to try to give everybody that Frederick Douglass education, where it's the uplifting of the human soul to the glorious light of truth, and give them that tool that they can go out and live a full life, a joyous life, a successful life. And I'm not talking about money. I'm just talking about the riches of knowing what it means to live a good life.
That's terrific. That's really inspiring. It actually sounds a little bit like Socrates. An unexamined life is not worth living. It sounds like you really are giving a lot of self-reflection to your own legacy. So President Corcoran, we appreciate you so much being a part of our podcast today. The listeners, if you want to figure out who the answer to that trivia question that we could not recall, we certainly would welcome your feedback on that, because again, we always are promoting the inquiry, and we hope that that will activate some of your muscles as well. Everyone else, if you want to learn more about the Education Foundation and some of the work that we do, you can certainly visit our website at edfoundationsrq.org. So thank you all so much for listening to today's podcast, and be sure to tune in to other episodes of Education Conversations on our site or wherever you listen to your podcasts. For now, this is Jennifer Vine signing off for the Education Foundation of Sarasota County.